Well, thank you, Keith, for the reading of the Word today, and thank you for that beautiful solo you just sang on. Beautiful. I think if I was a Baptist, I'd take the offering right then. That was wonderful. So we've heard good reading from Scripture, good music, and the message that I want to share today, how will you be remembered? In Psalm 90, attributed to the authorship of Moses, the only psalm attributed to his writing, where he led the children of Israel out of slavery into the promised land. They'd wandered the wilderness 40 years. I think he officiated his share of funerals. And the key passage, so Lord, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Or Lord, teach us to count our days. In other words, make every day count. Live it fully. Invest your life in all. Jesus said in Luke 6, verse 38, give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, overflowing. Men will give it back to you. So the lesson really is to give it away. Share your life. Be a blessing. So how do we want to be remembered? What's the best way to be remembered? How do you make your legacy? How can you, at the end of this journey, hopefully pass on those important themes in your life to the people who are closest to you? We're going to look at four characters today. I'll announce the pages if you want to follow along. But we're going to look at some interesting people. We're going to look at a queen. We're going to look at a warrior. We'll look at a very successful businessman. And then we'll look at a prisoner. We'll see all the lessons that we have today. But how they made their mark and then some of the last things that we can remember about them. I remember when I was doing hospice chaplaincy work, I had a call to visit a patient. Short notice, she was on her deathbed. I went to go visit her. And she was already in the active stage of dying. The hospice nurse said it probably could just be a couple hours, maybe a day, maybe a couple moments. You don't really know. But while I was there, I was able to hold her hand, prayed a little bit, and then all of a sudden she said, Jimmy, Jimmy, I'm over here, Jimmy. And she stuck her hand out. And then she took a last breath and exited this world and entered into life eternal. Well, about 15 minutes later, her niece came. Now, the patient who died was in her 90s. The niece must have been in her 60s, 65, maybe close to 70. And she came and she started crying because she just missed the last moment with her aunt. And I told her she died peacefully. But then she said, did she have any statements to you at all? Did she say anything? I said, well, she's been in the active stage of dying. But then right before she died, she said, Jimmy, Jimmy, I'm over here. Jimmy stuck her hand out. And the niece started crying. And she said, what did she say? I repeated it. I said, who is Jimmy? She goes, Jimmy was her cousin who was like a brother. And then she showed me a picture on the mantle. There was a little picture that she had, black and white pictures. She grew up on a farm. Jimmy was 5 years old. The patient, I think, was a year older. Jimmy died shortly after that in a drowning accident. She always missed her cousin Jimmy like a brother. And maybe right before she crossed over, Jimmy was there ready to welcome her into eternity. So it was a comforting thought. The niece really felt bad because she wasn't there, but when I relayed that message, I think she would always remember her aunt dying peacefully and entering into life eternal. The people we're going to look at teach us a very important lesson how to live life, how to leave your legacy, how do you want to be remembered. So, after Moses gives us this reading in Psalm 90, if you wouldn't mind, if you want to follow me along, turn to page 337 in your pew Bibles. In page 337, we come in contact with a queen. Her name is Jezebel. I always say to parents, never name your daughter Jezebel. In 337, we have this very interesting situation about a woman ready to die. So on page 337, there's a queen, and she's ready to die. The situation is that Zimri, a king, just 7 days before, took the throne and only lasted 7 days, and he died. There's a new king in town. His name is Jehu. So in 2 Kings chapter 9, in verses 30 through 33, we have Jezebel's, and it's subtitled here, a violent death. In verse 30, it says, when Jehu came to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it. She painted her eyes and adorned her head. and looked out to the window, and Jehu entered the gate and said, "Is it Pete Zimri, murderer of your master?" He looked up to the window and he said, "Who is on my side? Who?" Two or three of the eunuchs looked out at him. He said, "Throw her down." So they threw her down. Some of her blood spattered on the wall and on the horses, which then trampled onto her. Not a fitting way for any queen to die, but why did she paint her face? Why did she adorn her hair? Three possible interpretations. Number one, because she thought she maybe could seduce this new king. But with her sort of satirical comment to him, "Oh, Zimri, who died 7 days ago, you know, Jehu, you're going to die. You're not going to last too long on this throne." So I think she knew her fate was coming, but some people thought maybe with her beauty, she could use that to seduce him, maybe spare her life. Second opinion is, she's a queen. She knows she's a queen. "I'm going out as a queen. I'm not going to beg for mercy. I'm not going to pray to the one God of Israel who this guy believes. And I believe in a multiplicity of gods. I believe in Baal. I believe in all the deities that I've learned." In fact, she was cruel to the prophets of Israel. But the third one, and I think this is the one that makes the most sense. In her pagan custom, I believe Jezebel understood that as you live in this world, you go into the next world. So she painted her face, she did her hair, because I'm a queen and I'm going into this new journey as a queen. It might have been her belief. It might have been her way of thinking that when I exit this world, these pagan deities are going to greet me. And she died a tragic death, and she goes down in history as the one who had this body desecrated. A queen who met a very sad death leaves that legacy. Number two, let's go to a warrior. His name was Goliath. So in 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you want to look at page 259, a warrior, big strong guy. And he is ready to face Israel. And of course, the lessons of war, if you do a little historical research, oftentimes when armies would battle and they'd get together, and you'd see one army and another army, and then they would try to maybe make some type of arrangement for truce or peace. Usually the invading army would say, "Go ahead, you can pay us off, and we'll depart." And the army who's defending the city says, "We'll fight to the death." Then oftentimes they would say, "Well, then let's take your biggest warrior against our biggest warrior. Let's do one man against one man. Save all the bloodshed. Winner take all. Losers will retreat. We'll pay off. And then we won't have any bloodshed. We'll go back to our home, our farms, our wives." In 1 Samuel chapter 17, in verses 41 through 44, we have David, who is going to take on this giant named Goliath. And you know, there's some symbolism in this passage as well. Goliath represents the giants that we face in our lives. And with unconventional warfare, David's going to take him on. We know the story. But in this passage, look what David says to the warrior. And look what the warrior says to David. I thought this was amazing because I've read this many times. When David and Goliath meet, chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, verses 41 through 44, here's what the Philistine says. The Philistine came up and he drew near to David and with his shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and he saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. I don't know how many times I read that and I sort of missed that point. He cursed David by his gods, probably the same gods that Jezebel believed in. We know the story. Goliath loses the battle. David wins the battle with a slingshot and a stone, cuts off his head, and the Philistines are scared. Their biggest warrior has been taken down. How would you like to be remembered like a queen with this pagan worship, or a great warrior who curses the man who's ready to kill him by the false deities that he believed in? Well, now we go to the New Testament. And now let's look at a very successful businessman. It's a parable, and let's go to Luke chapter 12, and it's on page 949 in your New Testament in the Pew Bibles. 949, Jesus gives us a parable. Could have been someone true. We don't exactly know, but parable, remember, an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. When Jesus tells us this parable, he tells us something very important about living life today. In Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, the parable of the rich fool. I call him a businessman. He was a smart guy. Let's look at this parable. Someone said in the crowd to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to them, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Remember that. I've got a 50-year high school reunion that I'll be going to next year. I know you have to believe me, I look much younger than I am, but it is 50 years. And of course, we always say, that's a 25-year, what are you doing? What did you do in college? And then at the 50th, how are you retired? Are you enjoying your life? We talk about what we did, talk about things that have happened. You can sort of judge how successful people have been. Whatever your possessions might be, Jesus says, take heed, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Remember the old cliche, you never see a U-Haul following a hearse, right? Or how about the young widow, the grieving widow in her mid-20s, crying in front of the camera because the reporters are there, her very, very wealthy husband who died at the ripe old age of 86. And then one of the reporters says, "How much did he leave you?" And she said, "He left it all," because you don't take anything with you and your life doesn't depend on your possessions. And then Jesus gives the parable. Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I'll pull down my barns. I'll build larger ones. And there I will share all my grain and my goods. I'll store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many, many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is for those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God." I bet if Harvard Business School took a look at this parable, they might say a couple things. Number one, smart guy. He knew how to rotate crops. He knew how to collect inventory. Number two, he created jobs. He tore down his barns, built bigger ones, had to buy materials, had to hire people. I wonder if they had a supply chain management problem back then. Number three, he knew exactly the timing of the markets too, because when you store your grain, you can wait for that dynamic of supply and demand to kick in, and he could hold on to the supply. It's not going to waste, and he'll sell it at the right price. Smart guy, businessman, didn't do anything wrong. No overt sinfulness here. But this is one of the lessons that we learn about sins of omission and sins of commission. Commission is sins that we commit, omission, the sins that we commit by neglecting to do something. He neglected God. He never once said, "You know, Lord, this ground that's producing my crop, thank you for the rain, thank you for the sunshine." Remember that sixth grade science term called photosynthesis? I remember sixth grade, three best years of my life I spent in sixth grade. I liked it so much I kept coming back. Photosynthesis is that miraculous combination where green plants produce their own food because of the sunlight that God gives, the rain that comes from God, and the nutrients in the dirt, all belonging to God. The ground of a rich man brought forth plentifully. He had the title deed. He paid the taxes, but it really wasn't his. Everything that we possess isn't really ours. We're custodians for a short time. We'll pass it on to some generations. That's good legacy planning. But the ground of a rich man brought forth plentifully. He never once said, "Thank you, God, for the rain, sunshine, the nutrients in the dirt. Thank you, God, that now with this I can give to development of mankind. I can support some orphanages. I can give to education. I can support my local temple. I can do these things as an act of gratitude to you, the giver of all good things. Didn't say that. And Jesus says, thou fool, in this parable. God says, thou fool, tonight your life is required of thee. He left, leaving everything behind. We looked at a queen, a warrior, a businessman, and now let's look at a prisoner. His name is Paul, Paul the Apostle. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6, 7, and 8. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6, 7, and 8. That's on page 1085 in your New Testament, 1085. You know, when Tanya was giving that little lesson to the children, she quoted from Philippians, great passage about joy. Paul wrote Philippians, and if you remember, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon, the four prison epistles of Paul. Paul, while he's in prison, writes these letters. And then he'd be released for a short time. He'd read 1 Timothy and Titus, and then he'd be imprisoned again. And 2 Timothy is attributed to him as his last epistle. And here's what Paul the Apostle says before he dies. The rich man said before he died, I'm going to take an easy kickback. Goliath, before he died, cursed his gods, cursed David by his gods. And then Jezebel, before she died, went out believing, I'm a queen, I'm going into this new journey as a queen. Here's what Paul the Apostle says. In verse 6 at the bottom of the page, and then we'll turn over to the next page. Paul says, as for me, I am already being poured out as a libation or a drink offering. And the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I finished the race. I have kept the faith. And from now on, there is reserved for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me. And not to me only, but to all who longed for his appearing. He's going to get this crown of righteousness. Whatever it is, Bible expositors aren't quite clear because we don't know much about it. Maybe some type of eternal reward in heaven that goes with responsibility. We don't really know. But whatever it is, Paul says, I'm ready to receive that crown. Not only me, but to you, to all who are here today at First Church, to anyone who appears, ready to appear before Jesus. And you have faith in his coming, whether we meet him when we take our last breath, whenever the time comes for us to utter those last words, maybe it's greeting a loved one, Jimmy, I'm right here. Hopefully it's not something where we're counting our dollars and saying, how much more can I hoard? Or how much more fun can I have? Can I squeeze it out before I take my last breath? Do everything in balance. It's important to have a good time. Recreation, remember, means recreation. And I'll be back here on the Sunday before Labor Day. And Labor Day is a great day. I always talk about Labor Day and how we labor for the Lord. It's also a fun day because on Labor Day, if you're fortunate to have a job, you get paid for the day off. That's a pretty good gig. I like Labor Day. So the Sunday before Labor Day, we'll talk a little bit about labor, about living for the Lord, about making that legacy sort of all tied in together. And you know, when Tanya gave that mention to the kids, running the race, Paul finished his race well. Fought the good fight, finished his course, kept the faith. Now laid up for him that crown of righteousness, which a righteous judge will give him, not to him only, but to all who love his appearing. So it's at First Church here in Wauwatosa.